Ignition sequence start.
The Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yes!
Paul puts it up!
The conductor
goes to Hart. On Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that the Rockets are better than the Sixers, that they are endowed by their leader, cornrow headband Harden, with certain shots, that among these are layups, dunks, and the pursuit of three-pointers. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked on Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. The Rockets beat the Philadelphia 76ers by a score of 118-108 on the backs of two really great games and a passable game from Russell Westbrook. James Harden, a 44-point triple-double, 44-11-11. Clint Capella with 30-14 up against Joel Embiid, and Russell Westbrook dropping in his own 20 points as well as 7 rebounds and 4 assists. Look, coming into this game, I had a concern about the Rockets facing the 76ers mainly because of their length. My main two concerns were the 76ers' length and how that was going to impact the Rockets, because they've struggled against long, good defensive teams before. Although the 76ers have been kind of an up-and-down team this year, they are still ranked 8th in the league in defensive rating, but over the last, 5 to 8 games or so, something in that stretch, they've been kind of a middle of the pack or, lower, closer to the 20th percentile or 20th rank in the league as far as defensive rating is concerned. And so this 76ers club has had some ups and downs. And so even past that, I had concerns that this team was going to be able to prevent the Rockets from doing what they wanted to do, that the length was going to be an issue and that Joel Embiid was going to be an issue. And honestly, of those two concerns, neither one really mattered. Joel Embiid did not have a phenomenal game, just 20 points, 12 rebounds. He got yammed on a bunch by Clint Capella, and we'll get to that in the second segment. But this first segment, I just want to talk about James Harden and just what this man brings to the table, how much of a pleasure it is to watch him play the game of basketball. The way that he has to, night in and night out, attack defenses that are completely geared towards stopping him, and the fact that he can still drop in 44 points on insane shooting. 6 of 12 from behind the arc. 13 of 24 overall isn't phenomenal, but 12 at the charity stripe. So he's getting some free throws again. That's always a pleasant sight. Even in a game reffed by Scott Foster. The Scott Foster. Trust me, I'm sure many of you felt it too. At the very beginning of the game, when Scott waved off that continuation three-pointer near the end of the first quarter, I'm sure we were all feeling it. The energy in that first quarter was not great. Philadelphia led after 127-20. Kind of felt like it might be one of those Scott Foster type games. But James Harden wasn't about to let that happen. And Russell Westbrook, to his credit, as well as Clint Capella, though, that big three was insanely good in this game. They accounted for 94 of the 118 Rockets points on the evening. They really put in work. James especially. Just throughout the entire game, the way that he was attacking the defense, constantly being matched up, Ben Simmons was his primary defender. 6'10 Ben Simmons, who is definitely a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year right now. James was having to go up against his length, his athleticism, and was still able to shake and bake him and get his threes off and score at will, it felt like. To be able to not only to break down Ben Simmons on the perimeter, but then to get into the paint and then finish over the likes of Joel Embiid and Al Horford, there's not enough good things that we can say about James Harden. And it's great. I love that this was another national media game where people actually get a chance to see James Harden and how good he is. And not only that, but we got cornrow headband James Harden. That was such a look. I wondered when James Harden showed up to Toyota Center and had the hoodie wrapped ever so snugly around his head. I mean, he normally has that look, but it looked like it was extra snug because it looked like he was hiding something. And then sure enough, he unleashed the whole throwback look. Just, it was phenomenal with the throwback jerseys, with the ketchup and mustard. I loved every minute of it. Now, as far as his, you know, game goes, this game felt pretty good for the most part. It didn't, you know, that first quarter did not feel great. And then the start of the second, the Rockets really revved it up. That Russell Westbrook-led lineup at the top of the second quarter really got things off. They picked up the pace is what they did. And by picking up the pace against this, you know, Sixers team that has a lot of size, a lot of bigger, slower players, you could tell the Sixers were just exhausted by the midway part of the second quarter. So forcing the pace to speed up definitely played into the Rockets' favor. That third quarter worked out pretty well at times. Now there, and we'll get into this a little bit later. Obviously, there was the kerfluffle with Russell Westbrook and just his three or four plays in a row that were really rough to watch. And that's just what we've got to come to expect from Russell Westbrook. But the end of that game, James Harden icing the game with two back-to-back clutch three-pointers. There's just, Jeff Van Gundy said it so well when he was just like, look, there's nothing you can do. That's just, that is superb defense, and that is just transcendent offense. That is just exceptional offense. And sometimes that's what's going to happen. Sometimes the offensive player is just going to win. And more often than not, when your name's James Harden, you're going to beat the defensive player. Ben Simmons did a remarkable job holding Harden all night. Josh Richardson, also, phenomenal job. But overall, you just, unless you're going to double-team James Harden, you're not going to stop him. And that's what the league is starting to realize, is that this man has to be double-teamed or he will score at will. It's really becoming unreal how good this game. And honestly, James Harden must have something against the 76ers because he always has a game against them. This isn't the first time that he's posted a 40-plus point triple-double. I highlighted his 51-point game, 51-13-13 against the Sixers, the Kevin Hart game. James really must dislike the 76ers. And not only that, he must have a thing for January 3rd, because if memory serves, it was January 3rd, 2019, where James posted the 40-plus point triple-double against the Golden State Warriors that led to the overtime game-winning three-pointer that we all know and love so much. So he's got something against the Sixers, and he's definitely got something going on where he really enjoys playing on January 3rd, apparently. Maybe we could get some playoff games. No, kidding. Anyways, we've got more stuff that I want to talk about. I want to get into Clint Capela's game, the battle of the bigs between he and Joel Embiid, Clint Embiid Sr. Capela, as well as the duality of Russell Westbrook and just living with Bestbrook and living with Worstbrook, and kind of how this Rockets team can still be a contender even though he has moments where he's the worst player on the court and moments where he's the best player on the court. And we'll get to that in just 1 second. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, talking about the Rockets' 118-108 win over the Philadelphia 76ers, improving them to 24-11 on the season, now 13-4 at home. 76ers fall to 23-14 on the season, just 7-12 on the road. Kind of a rough road lineup for the Sixers, but it means they're playing well at home, so they've got that going for them. Now, Clint Capela. Look, Clint, he's had a history of calling out opponents and then not living up to it. Namely, the calling out of Golden State, saying that Clint Capela wanted to face Golden State and then basically ghosting during that playoff series. And I want to remind everybody that Clint isn't a bad center. Clint is easily a top 10 center in the league. You could maybe, off the top of my head, Jokic, Kat, Embiid, You could maybe make a case for top five or top seven-ish, but given what his role is and what he does for this Rockets team, which is anchor the defense, run the floor, and catch lobs on offense, he's not expected to create his own offense. And there's a lot of people, especially on social media, who kind of try to talk down Clint Capela and speak less of his play because, oh, he's just a dunk bot. No, it takes skill to do what he does. Otherwise, every other big in the league who is his height, his size, you know, his level of athleticism would be able to do what he does. No, that's not the case. Clint Capela has a very specific skill set. The chemistry that he's developed with Harden over the years is unmatched. They are the best lob threat in the entire league. The only duo that comes close in my mind, and it's not even a current duo, was Chris Paul alongside Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan back in the Clippers days. Lob City, right? And even Lob City wasn't nearly as threatening as James Harden and Clint Capela are. And credit to James Harden for being able to read this Sixers defense and constantly make the right choice of whether he needed to finish his own shot or to dish it to Capela. Again, Harden finished the night with 11 assists. And I don't know off the top of my head how many of those were to Capela, but it felt like probably about six or seven for sure. James Harden's ability to read the defense and continue to feed Capela was a huge part of this game. Because you have to break down the defense just enough to get the big, Joel Embiid, Al Horford, whoever, committed towards him, towards James, to then be able to feed Capela. And to be able to do that consistently throughout this game, and for Capela to be able to convert on all these opportunities, because they weren't always clean dunks. Now, he had a handful of clean ones, but he also had a bunch where he dunked it, like, literally right on top of Joel Embiid. And he didn't baptize Embiid at any point, but he came close a couple times. Posted the picture on Twitter of Clint Capela cradling a distraught Joel Embiid. So if you haven't checked that out, please go take a look. At JT Gatlin is where you can find me on Twitter. I think it's pretty funny, and so do 200-something other people, so there's that. Now, in addition to Capela's offensive play, defensively, he was huge for this team. He was only credited with two steals, but Capela definitely had his hands on a number of passes, just all in and around the paint, those kind of close looks. And again, the Sixers are a weird team because they have such little spacing with Embiid and with Simmons, because those two guys kind of clog up the paint area and occupy so much space right in the lane that there were a lot of times where there would be short little, you know, dish passes and stuff that Capela or Tucker would get their hands on. And disrupting those types of plays definitely took the Sixers out of their rhythm at times on offense. And so Clint needs to get some recognition for that, is that he really was the defensive anchor that this Rockets team needs him to be, and played really well against Embiid. There were plenty of times where Embiid had Capela in the post and opted to pass out or settle for a long, you know, mid-range two rather than actually take him into the paint. And Embiid is a guy who's, you know, Capella's a big, Embiid is really big. Embiid should have been bullying Capela the whole night, and he wasn't. Capela held his own, and that's important. It's important to see Capela match up with these dominant bigs, Embiid, Jokic, Cat, Gobert down the line against the Jazz. It's important to see what Capela can do against these bigs, and I mentioned it already a little bit about how he disappeared in the Golden State series. I don't think it's not because Capela is a bad center. There's no reason, you know, to say, oh, we just need to trade Capela. No. Draymond Green and that Golden State squad was just a tough matchup for Capela to do what he wanted to do. You got to give Draymond Green some credit. Defensive player of the year, Draymond Green. He knows how to neutralize Capela. And sometimes that just happens. Sometimes there's just bad matchups. And Draymond Green guarding Clint Capela is a bad matchup for Clint. Draymond is a highly intelligent player who at times has been able to neutralize Clint Capela. He's been able to mitigate the James Harden drives as well as mitigate the lob threat of Clint Capela at 6'5". Draymond Green is a phenomenal defender, and I know that it's really nice as Rockets fans to be able to sit here and, you know, we want to sit here and slander the Warriors and slander Draymond, but you have to also recognize greatness when it's there, and he is one of, if not the best defender in the league. So you give him credit for that, but give Clint credit for being able to show out against other traditional bigs, against the Embiids, against the Jokic's, against Cat, against Gobert. Capella's had times where he's made Gobert and Cat look like shells of themselves, where he's completely outplayed them. So I really like that he outplayed Embiid in this game. It was really fun to root for him. Again, he finished the night 30 points, 14 boards, couple steals, few assists, had a block. Surprised he didn't have more blocks in this game. Oops, didn't mean to hit my laptop there. That was a little scary. Anyways, Capella played exceptionally well and was a key in this win. Now, as far as his kind of, you know, at the end of the game, he basically, he dapped up Embiid, which I think there's, you know, kind of like a mutual respect there, which is good. Because obviously you're not going to get that mutual respect from Embiid and Russell Westbrook, because those two have a, you know, a bit of history together. But it felt really good to get this win on the backs of James Harden and Clint Capella, as well as a little bit, and we'll give him some credit, Russell Westbrook, who did play kind of an average game, probably not one of his better games. Did have four turnovers, just 9 of 22. Not a phenomenal game from Westbrook, but we'll dive into him here in just 1 second, so don't go anywhere. All right, and final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, going over the Rockets' 118-108 win over the Philadelphia 76ers. And this segment, we're going to talk about Russell Westbrook. Now, Russell Westbrook is such an interesting player. Rooting for him, following him, having him on this team is vexing at times. And that's, look, Salman Ali had the best tweet ever that I've seen, and it perfectly summarized how I felt, and it was just I'm pretty sure he used all 280 characters or whatever in a tweet, and it was just, Russ giveth, Russ taketh away, Russ giveth, Russ taketh away, Russ giveth, Russ taketh away, repeated over and over. And that just feels so absurdly true. Is that, and you can look at, like, there's the example of the Nets game where Russ played a phenomenal first quarter and then went 0-for-9, missed all 9 shots in the second quarter. He is the epitome of an up and down player. There's a subreddit called r/maybe maybe maybe, and it's full of GIFs and videos of, you know, you're just watching and you have no idea what's going to happen. You don't know if it's going to end well or end poorly, and that's kind of what Russell Westbrook is. That's what it feels like, is because you're watching him and you're thinking, you don't even know what you're thinking. You don't know how it's going to work out. And I think there were points in this game where we got both versions. We got the great version and we got the bad version. What jumps to mind immediately is the sequence in the third quarter where he turned the ball over, missed the dunk, and then missed the layup. All 3 possessions in a row. 3 brutally horrible possessions for Russell Westbrook in a row. But then you also get the Westbrook who in the fourth quarter, around the 8 or 9 minute mark, I want to say, score was 76ers were catching back up. Score was, you know, Rockets were down to a 6-point lead, I want to say. Westbrook drains a long 2. Great. Then the very next possession, Westbrook gets a wide open 3-pointer. Drains it. Great. And the Rockets go back up by 11. Gives them a little bit of cushion to kind of get towards the end of the game where then, we already talked about it, James Harden ices it with 2 back-to-back 3-pointers. So you get versions of Westbrook. You get Westbrook where he's phenomenal, where he's, you know, the best player on the court for both teams. And then you get the version of Westbrook where he makes these silly mistakes, where he doesn't know how to get himself out of that extra gear because he constantly plays at such a frantic pace, at such a high level, with so much intensity that you can't really ever, there isn't a cruise control setting for Westbrook, it doesn't feel like. It feels like he's either go, 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 or not involved at all. And by having him not involved at all, then it's not great because then he's not a threat to shoot. He's just kind of standing around the 3-point arc, not doing anything. And it kind of feels like that's where they were at as they built up that really big lead. And then as Westbrook had his series of mistakes that kind of compounded themselves and made things worse for this Rocket squad, it makes it really hard to pull away from a team with Russell Westbrook. And again, this isn't a horrible problem to have. Because you do have James Harden, who is one of if not the most efficient player in the league. And he's able to kind of be your cruise control. That's his, you know, his methodic style of play is something that you can kind of slow up and rely on a little bit more so than Westbrook. Westbrook is like the engine that you can ride. And you can ride him really rough for 2 to 3 quarters for the majority of the game. And then you get to the fourth quarter, and he's probably a little bit gassed, maybe a little bit tired. Maybe the decision-making isn't that great in the fourth quarter. Sometimes. We've seen moments where Westbrook can have great fourth quarters where he is clutch broke. But that's James Harden territory, and we saw that on display in this game, where James Harden did take over down the stretch, but Westbrook had his clutch buckets in the earlier part of the fourth quarter to kind of help seal this victory. But living with Westbrook, it is difficult. The highs and lows of Russell Westbrook are tough. Listen, any Thunder fans listening to this that have, you know, followed Westbrook over and are now listening to this podcast and keeping up with the Houston Rockets because they are Russell Westbrook fans through and through, look, I get it. It is phenomenal rooting for this guy, but it's also just it's like a roller coaster, just the up and down. Like we as Rockets fans, we get it now. We understand what OKC has gone through for years. And I don't want to say gone through has a negative connotation, what they've experienced for years. But again, the Rockets come away with the win, and that's what's important. And there were stretches in this game. Look, Westbrook could have easily, if he didn't miss, you know, the pair of, he had the putback slam that he barely missed. He had the wide open dunk that he whiffed. He's had a couple layups that could have gone in. Westbrook could have easily had one of his most efficient games of the season. Those were just some bunnies that he missed. And he also took a shot to his hand kind of early on in the game, shot to his elbow. Those things were bound to impact him, to affect him to some degree. Now, I'm not making up excuses for him, but I'm also not going to sit here and just say it was what Russell Westbrook's worst game of the season. But by no means is that the case. And they got such good production out of James Harden and Clint Capella on this evening that it didn't matter. The turnovers that he had, they didn't cost you the game. What Westbrook provided to you helped you win, and that's what's important. He kept his three-point attempts down. He only had 2 3-point attempts on the evening. His free throw shooting in this game was a bit of a concern, just 1 of 5 at the free throw line. That's not good. That's trending back downwards towards the Westbrook that struggled with free throws. So I'd like to see him keep that number consistently around the 80% mark. That's what he's been at over the last, 10 or so games, and I'd like to see him stay there. As for the rest of the team, very quiet evening from everybody else. PJ Tucker had 0 points, only attempted 1 shot throughout the entire night. Just 5 rebounds. He did have a block. Not a lot going on there for PJ Tucker. Really quiet night on the stat sheet, but as always, playing great defense and just hustling. There were a couple really key rebounds that he got. There was that one offensive rebound near the tail end of the game that I think he snagged that was super important. Daniel House, pretty quiet evening as well. Just 4 rebounds, had 1 assist, just 1 3-point make out of his 3 tries. So not a great evening from House. Hartenstein didn't post anything. 0 points, had just a couple rebounds in 11 minutes of play. Rivers, 6 points. Ben McLemore, just 3 points. And Eric Gordon, who struggled a bit from behind the arc, just 2 of 10 shooting from behind the 3-point line. Did play 30 minutes, though. Did finish with 12 points off the bench. So not a phenomenal game from Eric Gordon, but that's what we're accustomed to this. Eric Gordon is a volume shooter, and some nights he's going to bring it. Some nights he's going to be lights out, and he can't miss from behind the arc, and other nights he's going to struggle. And, I mean, the Rockets as a team, they shot a respectable percentage, but that was in large part due to James Harden. They were 12 of 32 from behind the arc. James had 6 of them. So just 6 3-point makes for the rest of the team, and then 6 for James, who is still shooting a wholly unreal percentage from behind the arc. 6 of 12 at 50% for this game. I want to say he's probably above the 50% margin for the past, there's like a streak of like 8 or 9 games in a row or 10 plus games where he's shot damn near 50% from the 3-point line. I don't have the stat right in front of me, but it seems like it's somewhere around that mark. Now, there may be a bit of a concern that the minutes were a bit high across the starters in this game. James with 41, Clint with 37, PJ 37, Westbrook at 35. But bear in mind, the Rockets do have 5 days of rest. They don't play again until they play the Hawks on Wednesday. So they've got a big chunk of rest. And there's a bit of back and forth as to whether or not Westbrook is going to play the Hawks game and then sit out for the OKC game, which is the following night on Thursday. There's no doubt in my mind that after 5 days of rest, either Russell Westbrook will play both games or he'll just simply sit out for the Hawks game and then play the OKC game in Oklahoma City. That's more than likely what's going to happen is that Westbrook will actually sit out the first night of the back-to-backs, which we've discussed before. I've presented the possibility of having Westbrook sit out on the first night of the back-to-back rather than the second night, because then the second night, when everybody's a little bit more tired, you have maybe some dead legs depending on how the first night went, those kinds of things, then you get a fresh Russell Westbrook on the second night. So I'm excited for this possibility to see him sit out against the Hawks and be fresh and ready to go for the Oklahoma City game. Rockets beat them once earlier this year here in Houston. That was a great, you know, Chris Paul comes back to Houston. Great matchup there. I'm sure it'll be a great matchup again in Oklahoma City. Russ's return home, which will be phenomenal. Now, past that, the Rockets have some more middling teams kind of down the schedule and then their next big game. So this was great. They got a big win against the Nuggets, big win against the 76ers, and they've got some, you know, kind of hovering around 500 opponents coming up here for the next week or so. And then they've got the LA Lakers in town Saturday, January 18th. That will be the next big test for this Rockets squad. Hopefully Eric Gordon can continue to knock a bit of the rust off. And maybe it's not even rust. Maybe it was just a bad game from EG. But D'Antoni's going to keep playing with these lineups. Again, Austin Rivers with only 7 minutes on the evening. You'd like to maybe find a little bit more playing time for Austin Rivers. Maybe you trim down the starters' minutes a bit. But that's your nine-man rotation. You got your starters, and then off the bench, you've got Rivers, McLemore, Gordon, and Isaiah Hartenstein. And situationally, he may go to Gary Clark still. We don't know that yet. Remains to be seen. We've got to kind of wait it out and see how D'Antoni continues to play with these lineups and see how he figures things out. But that Lakers game, that's the next one that I have circled on my calendar for the most important game for this Rockets squad. So I think that's where we'll leave things off for today, for this Saturday morning, January 4th. As always, thank you for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin, and of course the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website, LockedOnRockets.com, and our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you guys to reach out to me and let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes that show up straight to your inbox before they're published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this Saturday morning, January 4th, this is where we break things. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.